We are pleased to be in Medford this evening, and what a great turnout. It's actually very, very nice to see this many folks here. I'll go over some rules here in a few minutes, but I would like to extend our gratitude to the school district and to all the folks that are here and allowing us to come and conduct this meeting here. Both the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate, Representative Karen Morgas and Mora, she'll kill me, Menace, and President of the Senate, Senator Courtney, came up with this idea, and we think it's very well, and they're fully supportive of this. And I believe Senator Courtney is still going to arrive here. There was an accident out of Salem, and he got delayed in the traffic jam, so he will be coming. We'd like to extend a thank you and a special introduction to Commissioner Gilmore, who is here, and we will. We have a. Let me explain the process of what we're going to do tonight. Senator Schrader, who is my colleague and co-chair, along with myself, I'm Representative Wayne Scott, and all of these folks are the members, or at least some of them, some of the membership. They're all members of the Joint Ways and Means, and I think your local representative, Sal Escobal, is here also. And I think... Senator Bates is here also, or will be shortly. The process that we're going to do tonight, we have a PowerPoint presentation that will take about 10 minutes to run through and give you a quick explanation of the work that Senator Schrader and Vice Chair Morgan and Vice Chair Carter have been working on and compiling the last few weeks. Additionally, we obviously have about 7-8 pages worth of sign-ups tonight. We're scheduled to go until 9 o'clock. What I would like to do is tell you that we're going to allow 2 minutes for presentation. Vice Chair Morgan will be timing. We have cards here. When you see the yellow card, that indicates that you have 30 seconds remaining. When you see the red card, you have 5 seconds, and we're asking you to wrap it up. There's about 80 people that are signed up to speak, and one of the things I'd like to ask you, if your point has been made, and you're just coming up to reiterate the points that have been made, we would appreciate it if you would... surrender your time and allow someone that may have a different point so that we can attempt to get as far along in the sign-ups that we have. And with that, I understand I missed one of the judgeships of here. Judge Philip Arnold is here this evening. If you're part of a group that's here to address, if you would also please be considerate and maybe just send a couple folks that could represent you on behalf of the group, then we would appreciate that, and we will make every attempt to get as far as we can get through the agenda tonight. We are on a schedule, and we need to try and adhere to that. So with that, I believe... that we will begin here. Let me give you a quick update as to where we are and what we've done. About a month and a half ago, of course, we convened into this and we've been working on the budget process. But about a month and a half ago, the Senate President and the Speaker of the House, along with some of us up here, came to an agreement on the amount of money that we would spend this year. We call it the size of the pie. It is now $12.393 billion. We've all committed that that's the maximum amount that that we will spend. As a matter of fact, that's also the minimum amount that we will spend. So we have allocated those throughout the agencies, and you will see what our presentation as to the amounts that we have at this point either dedicated, or in some cases, frankly, we are in difference as to what those amounts will be. And that's part of this reason for this process, is to help you all give us some of the information so that we can help make some of those decisions. Okay, I think we're ready for a PowerPoint, and I'm going to go through it pretty quickly so that we leave as much time as possible to have you make your comments.
Yeah, ready.
The first page it shows you our budget priorities and principles that we developed, and you'll see in there several items that we used in order to make this. I might point out that we have some of these available if you need. We would appreciate it if you would go to the Ways and Means website. You can download this article, PowerPoint, and you'd be able to have it. But we do have a few copies here. And it basically lays out the criteria that we used, and throughout here you will see different things that put us as to the way that we were going to make the budget. Next slide. This is a break of the discretionary funds and the total that was in the governor's recommended budget. He had to complete his budget in December. Next page is a comparison between the Senate co-chair, Senator Schrader, and myself as to what expenditures we're doing. And you note down in the bottom, they both balance to the amount, total amount that we have agreed upon. And throughout that happens to be the amounts. The next page gives you a kind of a history of the budget plan and a comparison, starting with the 01-03. Going through 03-05, the governor's recommended, and then showing you again where the House co-chair and the Senate co-chair. Next slide is a summary of the state school fund, and it will show you the total amounts that the governor's recommended budget, and again what Senator Schrader and I have done, and to what amounts those are on. The next slide is just a graph to show you again what K-12 school funding with local and state support, and you kind of get the gist there, and again it's showing in the last column where Senator Schrader and I are. The next slide, the governor's recommended discretionary spending and of the current biennium, and what categories they fall in. All others obviously has a large amount. The next slide, governor's recommended compared to what the House and Senate co-chairs' budget plans are. And again, the next slide shows what the tuition rates do and what occurs as the tuition increases in the OUS enrollment system. And the next slide is kind of the same thing in the community college tuition system. Next slide shows you the prison population from 89 through projected through 2014. It gives you an idea of what Measure 11 effect has on our prison population and our projected population. The next slide is from the total funds that we are spending or have spent in the Department of Corrections. And again, you can kind of look back and see when Measure 11 kicked in and why those are. And at this time, I guess I need to say that Senator Courtney made it through. Yeah. I did tell...
Sal's there, too. Where did Sal go?
Here.
Senator Courtney, I did tell them that you were caught up in traffic. The next slide is the OWEB capital and non-capital grant program, which the watershed program and the enhancement board measure 66 discretionary lottery that come from the lottery funds. And the next several slides, and we'll quickly buzz through them, but again, they are at the broken down by agency and particular amounts in each category. The GRB governor's recommended budget, House co-chair and Senate co-chair, and then if we have a difference, what that difference might be. I wanted to buzz through that quickly to allow you to see what we've been working on. The last page, you can go to the website and download this. We also have an email address that should you not be able to speak tonight, or if you have other comments that you would like to make, there's a email address there that you can contact us. Senator Schrader, do you have anything you'd like to add? Okay, we're going to start with the testimony, and I think we would we have some folks that traveled a great distance, so I'm going to call that group up first. What I'm going to do is call four people at a time, and then I'm going to call four people that are on deck. If you can rotate through as quickly as possible, again, it will expedite the exchange process, and we'll be able to get to more people. We'll begin with Tom Keel, Lenore Paulson, David Biggs,
Briggs.
David Briggs, Ralph Perrin, and on deck we will have Mike Leopold, Christine Nichols, Judge Arnold, and Bill Carter. Please state your name for the record. And if you have written testimony, one more thing. If you do have written testimony, we'd prefer that you do not read it. Summarize it. Give us a copy of it. And we do promise you that we read it. But, again, for the sake of time, we'd like to get to as many people as possible. So please begin, sir.
My name is Tom Keel. I am a board member at Umpqua Community College since 1975. I'm sitting like I do at a meeting with my two other board members by me, so it's not too new. They're going to cover some different things. I just wanted to bring up, and I know you're aware of it, but still, the other factor that's really a problem to the community colleges and all of the education districts, and of course that's the PERS problem hit us at the same time. We had a lot of good staff members retire early. And the other problem is we're having a hard time recruiting people because of the image we have in Oregon now of the possible more cuts and this type of thing. An example is we had an opening here not too long ago for an administrative position. Normally we would have had probably 38 to 40 applicants. We had three. And this is including even in-state. People are afraid. So I hope that this and the fact that we hope that more funds will become available, that this will improve that situation too, because it's not going to happen overnight. It didn't come overnight, but it is a real problem to all of us trying to get people that are very qualified. We don't want to cut our education just to save a few dollars. Okay, Susan, I'm surprised you didn't start with the red one with me, but that's all right. Anyway, the other members of our board will cover some other items. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
I'm Lenore Paulson. I am a board member at Umpqua also, along with Tom and Dave.
And I just wanted to talk about the impact on our students. And I saw the graph that you had up for what was happening to enrollments versus increase in tuition. And we certainly can say the very same thing. And at our board meeting this week, we increased tuition $4 more per credit hour. So since 2001-2002 year, our tuition costs have gone from $39 per credit hour to now $58. And for a low family income county like ours, that's pretty serious. And along with this decreased number of sections of classes, and the other thing I think that is happening with all of us is that we're increasing fees. So things that used to be covered under tuition students are just being nickeled and dimed because of having to have community colleges survive. So I guess that's all I want to say. It's a difficult situation and it's tough for students.
Thank you.
Hey, co-chairs, vice chairs, and members of the committee. I'm David Briggs, and I serve on the UCC board, Umpqua Community College. I live in the Canyonville area. Lenore covered a lot of the topics that I was going to cover, so I'm going to be very brief, and I will turn in my written testimony. But it's very difficult at this point in time for us to move ahead while we're constantly suffering budget cuts. And even though the co-chairs' budgets are an increase over last year, effectively, with our PERS increase and increase in insurance costs, we are still suffering a shortfall of approximately $500,000. And we're just struggling to provide more access to students. And we can't continue to charge our students more and offer them less and expect to lead our state and economy forward. So thank you.
Mr. Co-Chair, if I might, these are people that are very well known in Douglas County, and I just wanted to say that we really appreciate you taking your time to come to Medford to testify on behalf of the college, and thank you for what you do.
Good evening. My name is Tony Hagan, and I happen to be a student at Umpqua Community College as well as a representative of the Oregon Community College Students Association. During my time at Umpqua, my tuition has risen 57%, and many of my fellow students have had to decide whether they wanted to eat and house their families or go to school and get an education that would allow them to make enough money to live. A lot of us have been in that position and had to decide whether we wanted to learn or live. And right now what we'd like to turn our slogan from learn or live to live and learn. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next group that was called, please. We'll have Don Scudrick, Peter Egstedt, Steve Monroe, and Elizabeth Zinser on deck.
Since it's in front of me, I'll start first. My name is Mike Leopold. I'm a school board member in Beaverton. I'm here with two messages. We need certainty, and we don't need caps or limits. And it was stated earlier about that, and I'll elaborate about our costs that continue to rise. Certainty is necessary in order to maintain our education in Beaverton. The uncertainty led to disruption here in the last 2 years in terms of hiring and in terms of unknown. So the certainty, whether it's 5.1, 5.2, it doesn't matter. Y'all need to do your job so that we can then do our job and get the money to where it matters in kids. But if we don't have certainty, we'll have to hire teachers in September, October, as we have in the past, and pull kids out of classes that they've been in for 2 months. So certainty is vital in K-12 for us to be able to run an effective district. We can't have limits as we go into negotiations. As we've seen with PERS, as mentioned earlier, the costs continue to go up. And if we're bound by those escalations of costs, that takes away from our classrooms. And the disruptions in our classrooms and taken away from the classroom is not what I believe any of you want. You want more money to go into the classroom, less money to go for administrative type costs. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Chris Nichols. I'm from Brookings Harbor School District, and I'm the superintendent there. I've been in education 27 and a half years in this state. In 1978 and 79, we voted as teachers to take a 0% increase in our salary so that we could buy needed items for the school for the students. In those days, we did cake raffles and fundraisers for non-essential items, and now schools are doing cake raffles and fundraisers for essential items. In the 13 years I've been in the Brookings Harbor School District, I've had to cut my budget every single year. We've cut spending in January to try to hoard dollars to make the balanced budget for the future year. Currently, at the 5.2 recommended number, that would allow me to begin the budget process at $501,000 in the hole, and that's before settling with the HEA, our union. It's pretty hard to convince people that you really care about them when you keep telling me you don't have any money for them. It makes us make hard decisions. The programs that are suffering are the TAG programs, vocational education, foreign language, some of our athletics and activities. So students suffer all along the way. It's a difficult decision because I respect and admire all the other agencies that are here, and without them, schools would be at a very disadvantage. Because we've been asked to counsel, provide transportation, food, clothing, medical services, home tutors, and a variety of other services for families and children these days. All of us are squabbling over the same bone, unfortunately. But the schools, I believe, do need your help, as do all the other agencies. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Phil Arnold, a circuit court judge here in Jackson County. Thank you for being here. I spent 10 years on the Ashland City Council and another 4 years or so on the Budget Committee. I understand the kind of problem you're dealing with to some extent, although I don't think I ever had one as tough as you're focusing on now. And I hate to be one of those people sitting here saying, look at me, let me tell you why we need money. And I don't mean to do that, but you came to Jackson County, and I'd like to tell you how we work a little bit and what the fiscal problems are here. Of course, I'm here speaking on behalf of the Chief Justice's maintenance budget, but I want to talk about just what the numbers are and how that works here. If I could take you to see anything about our system, where I would take you would not be the courtroom, but it would be to the clerk's office back behind and watch how people work. You would find a operating group of people who are both efficient and courteous and really get the work done. You would be proud as Oregonians of these people who are working for us in the court system. And it's those people that really make it work. We sit in the courtrooms, and whatever cases come to us, we handle those. We do measure cases in terms of a per-judge case within the system. We've been the most efficient circuit in the state for a number of years. But we look at things on a per-judge basis, and just trying to do some quick math here this afternoon, we had 23,000 cases last year. That's good for me. To somebody else, tell me not to talk so much. Thank you very much. I appreciate your being here.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Don Skundrick. I'm going to be speaking between two attorneys here, so I'm going to read most of mine. I'll really come off wrong. My name is Don Skundrick, and I'm here tonight to support the Oregon Judicial Department with regards to funding during the 05-07 biennium. As we know, the cornerstones of Oregon's judicial systems are to protect the public in general, to protect Oregon's vulnerable citizens, and to help sustain Oregon's businesses. While numbers 1 and 2 are absolutely vital to the healthy and progressive Oregon, I'm here specifically to speak on behalf of number 3, the businesses of Oregon. Why Oregon businesses? Because Oregon businesses are essential to the economic well-being of Oregon citizens. And how is this connection made between our court system and business? It's the court's responsibility to facilitate, among others, resolving financial disputes, deciding contract disputes, resolving property disputes, and ruling on business and commercial law. My concern is if the Judicial Department's budget is reduced by the $25 million proposed by the governor, we will see some of the same effects that we saw in 2003. Courts closing on Friday. Last time anyone checked, business is open 24/7. Discontinuation at worst, reduction at best of rulings on small claims cases, case backlogs resulting in delayed justice, including access to timely dispute resolutions for businesses. Why is timeliness important? Because time is money. Let me leave you with this, if I may. Oregon's a wonderful place to live in, to do business in many cases. However, given the difficulties that you all face, and trying to meet at so much worm to get around, or a little bit of worm to get around to all the chicks in the nest, I know it's difficult, but please consider, if you will, restoring the original Chief Justice budget, or at least coming up with a co-chair's recommendation. Thank you, and thank you for being here.
Thank you. Okay, next group, and on deck we will have Danny Jordan, Linda Hildebrand, Sarah Bacon, and David Trump, please.
My name is Steve Monroe. I represent RCC. I'm the student body president at Redwood campus. And I just want to talk about a contrast, a scary contrast right quick. If you look at me, you would see an African-American. And historically, we were denied the right for an education. It was against the law for us to read or write. But that has passed, thank God. But now, on the day that we stand on in 2005, if you look at me, and if you look at yourself, and you look at everybody around here, of all genders and all races, the sad part is, due to legislative budget deficits, people, millions and thousands of people, will not be able to have an education. And the message is from our colleges, they're scared, they're concerned, they're worried. And we know that you guys have the power to make the right decisions. So I'm asking you, when you do make that decision, when you do forget all the graphs and the charts, when you do make that decision, look into your child's eye. Remember the faces that you see in here, these children in here, who will not have the right for an education.
Thank you. Good evening. I'm Peter Angstead, president of Rogue Community College, and I'm very appreciative that you're here today. I'm here in support of community colleges. We would ask that you look to the possibility of funding community colleges at $440 million. Currently, we're funded at $410 million. That extra $30 million, if you think of it almost as a tank of gas in the state of Oregon's economic engine, and with gas prices these days, it's not too hard to imagine that $30 million would fill your tank. You look at that and you can see that community colleges are the very fuel-efficient cars in the organization. We're the type of group that will produce 50 to 60 miles per hour, or miles per gallon for you, and we're very efficient, very effective. The other thing I want to ask is that you do look to support the capital improvement projects. We have a great project going on down here that we're very hopeful of between SOU, Southern Oregon University, and Rogue Community College. It's a project using 11G bonds. We're really excited about it. It would help us to gain needed instructional space, and I can't do enough to urge your support for that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Linda Hildebrand. I'm here as an interested individual as well as a member of the Rogue Valley Council of Governments Senior Advisory Council and the Disability Services Advisory Council. I myself have been disabled since 1987, and since then I've been involved in advocacy issues related to disabled and seniors. I appreciate all your efforts on the state's budgets thus far. There are a lot of hard decisions to be made. While I realize that the youth are our state's future, I am concerned that the Oregon seniors and people with disabilities will lose vital services that currently allow them to remain as independent as possible. For instance, Oregon Project Independence provides in-home care for low-income seniors who cannot afford to pay for all the help they need but do not qualify for Medicaid. It has been shown that these services cost much less than the same person receiving Medicaid services. Other states have looked at this program as a model. If this program is cut, so some program enrollees could end up requiring much more costly nursing home care. Finally, as a disabled person, I urge passage of Senate Bill 870, which would provide for modernization of OPI to include coverage for disabled individuals. Lastly, I'd also like to discourage further cuts to the Oregon State Extension budget, which supports local urban horticulture programs. I just completed this year's class and found it to be an invaluable experience. This program is a true community gem. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Elizabeth Zinser, the president at Southern Oregon University. I joined my colleague here from Rogue Community College, my colleague, President Angstead, to say thank you from post-secondary education and also note what a joy it is for us to see K-16 represented so well around the room here today. That's real joy to us, needless to say. And I just want to say thank you very much from Southern Oregon University. We certainly can understand on a certain level, not from where you sit, of course, but can understand the dilemmas and the challenges that you have in the decisions that are ahead. And simply want to, of course, make our case over and over again about what an extraordinary investment it is in the future of Oregon and in our region to have a strong post-secondary education system. And we're just very proud and grateful for the partnership that we are enjoying with Rogue Community College. And finally, to say thank you, because we understand from what we hear that there's a tremendous amount of support for the 11G bond aspects of the facility that we're putting together that we believe is a model opportunity for community college-university collaboration. And we're very proud of our local delegation in helping us to articulate that and what it means to the economic development and future of our region. Of course, we very much hope that there'll be some support for the matching opportunities that Southern Oregon University relies on. But however this comes out, we want you to know that this is going to be a successful project, and it's going to really be a centerpiece for the development of Medford and all of the opportunities across this valley in Southern Oregon. Thank you.
That's on deck, Kevin Talbert, Connie Saldana, Elizabeth Nicholson, and David Toller. Or Dave Toller.
Thank you. Mr. Co-Chair, Vice Chairs, and members of the committee, my name is Danny Jordan. And first of all, I promise not to bark at you, but I can't stop these two chihuahuas from attacking. I'm here representing Jackson County. I'm the Director of Community Justice, which is a combined adult and juvenile supervision service program. I'm also the president of the Oregon Association of Community Corrections Directors, and I also am a member of the Oregon Juvenile Directors Association. I'm here to cover just a few brief points because I only have 2 minutes, unless I get sick for being a member of three things.
It was a nice try.
I've worked across the state. I spent 10 years in Umatilla County, 4 years in Clatsop County, and most recently I'm with Jackson County. I have a pretty good perspective in terms of community corrections that I hope to share with you. I know that there's a difference in the budgets between the House and Senate side for community corrections. We've been working with the Governor's Community Corrections Committee to offer some remedies to that. Real briefly, the current service level funding that the Community Corrections Directors, along with this committee, are proposing is the $190-plus million. I want to talk briefly about that. This amount of money really represents a bargain in the criminal justice system. We supervise almost 35,000 offenders across the state for this $190 million, as opposed to the roughly 13,000 that we incarcerate for some $1 billion that you're familiar with. Now that I only have 30 seconds, I'll move to the juvenile side. Juvenile crime prevention plan, it really is going to cause some severe consequences across the state. I want to say that this program targets at-risk youth. It deters them out of the system. It saves money in the long run. And my Health and Human Services Director would kill me if I didn't tell you that the issue with meth in the public safety system and the supervision we provide is very important to address. We have parents choosing methamphetamine over their kids. We have – thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Connie Saldana. I work in the senior and disability services arena and feel very strongly that our services should be funded. I'd like to say, though, that I live in a community that I'm very proud of, and I'm proud of it because all of the sectors, education, human services, and public safety, work together very well in this area to try to support the citizens of our community. What is disappointing is that there's a philosophy out there that says no matter what, we're not going to increase revenue. We're going to pit these three areas against each other and see who wins. I think it's really unfair, and I think it's not community-minded that an ideology should stand between where we are and common sense solutions. So I would really hope that you would look at some of the expenditure budget side of things, the tax breaks that are going out. I know that you have definitely been considering those, but I would hope that you would see that more revenue is needed in the system so that we can keep it at a working level that supports our community. So thank you very much. I really appreciate all the work that you do for us up in Salem.
Hi, my name is Sarah Bacon. I am the student body president for Rogue Community College Riverside Campus. And I'm here to tell you less than 440 will not make it for us. Right now, I work 4 jobs, and I go to school full-time. And I work 4 jobs because it is important for me to come back and give to the Rogue Valley what they have given me. RCC has given me opportunities that I wouldn't have had. I'm here talking to you. This is phenomenal. You don't even know. And it's worth it for me. But without this money, we're not going to have a school. We have single parents. We have people in rehab. We are enabling people to come back, get their lives together, get educated, turn around, get jobs, and give you more money to educate the next generation. We have a 2-year turnover. Many of our students come in, spend 2 years with us, and are back in the workforce. And one other thing that I just wanted to let you know, I lost $100 working tonight to come and talk to you, and it was worth it. That $100, let me tell you, I'm going to need, but it's worth it for me to lose money. And every time I come to Salem and every time I talk to you, I lose $100 or $2 working 55 hours a week and a full load. I can't handle any more. If you don't give us our funding, students like me will be out of school.
Thank you. I might ask you, if you would, please, to please hold your applause if you could. These are very good comments, and we appreciate that, but we are recording this, and I understand that it's makes the machine act up. So if you would, please, we'd appreciate that. Sorry.
We can't have the machine act up.
No.
I'm Dr. David Trump. I'm on the board of Rogue Community College. And I think the young lady to my left has said it extremely well. At Rogue, as to other community colleges, we provide basic skills education as well as preparation to transfer to a university. Much of our work is to develop the skills, especially for blue-collar workers. Medford is growing. There's a pressing need to train a supply of workers able to work within this new industry for now and for the future. At RCC, we have 2.2% of the 18 to 65-year-old population in Jackson County, whereas others have as high as 4 to 5%. There is an unmet need in Jackson County, and we have a number of economic disadvantages that we need to serve. Most organizations can raise their sales price. We can't. Thus, it is difficult to meet costs on the back of the students. We, as are all community colleges, are working to keep costs down, but eventually we're going to have to raise fees and other costs. We ask you to fund the community college budget for the benefit of so many that are here this evening. Thank you.
Thank you. Next group that will be on deck, Nathan Jacoby, Leslie Meyer, Jim Sims, and Bill Eckhart. Go ahead, sir.
Good evening. Thank you for coming to Southern Oregon to listen to the concerns of Oregonians. My name is Kevin Talbert. I'm a member of the board of Rogue Community College. Many of the points I have in the written testimony I'll leave with you have already been made. We want to assure that you do not fund community colleges at less than $440 million. Let you know we're excited about the efficiencies that will come from sharing facilities in Medford and the opportunities that will bring to students at both Southern Oregon University and Rogue Community College. We have an important role in preparing the workforce in Southern Oregon and throughout the state. Community colleges are so often that institution that provides a chance. Sometimes it's a first chance to get a good job. Sometimes it's a second chance. Sometimes it's to a population that needs a chance because it's a population most at risk. But community colleges are that place where people can prepare for the workforce, and perhaps it'll be a place where there will be a difference between being an employed, tax-paying citizen of Oregon or being someone in the community that's a cost to the community because they don't have the education, skills, and training that are needed to fully participate in the community. So I believe that there are many priorities that you have to choose between. It's a difficult task, but there is no better investment for Oregon's future than education, K-12, community colleges, and higher education. Thank you.
Like John Lennon said when he played for the Queen, some of you guys can just rattle your jewelry.
I'm Edith Nicholson. I'm a case manager with Senior and Disability Services in Grants Pass. I want to echo what Connie Saldana said about finding creative ways of bringing in revenue. I just want to take a few moments and tell you why. In Salem, you will talk about budget cuts. In the DHS administration, they will talk about program cuts because of those budget cuts. When that trickles down to me in my chair, I look into the eyes of a human, and I say, your program has been eliminated. Don't put me in that position. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Nathan Jacoby,
speaking on behalf of DUD, the Disability Advocacy Group. I'm here with my wife, who is sitting in the wheelchair over there. A year and a half ago, even though she has only the use of one limb, she was since she could feed herself with a fork, she was found ineligible for benefits and was dropped. But with that one limb that she works, she created now a powerful disability advocacy group that we are working with many of you legislators. With the three academic degrees that I have in my pocket, I will be the last one not to admit that education is a top priority. However, as Connie Saldana has mentioned, you are pitting things that don't belong together and facing them each other. In the case of disability, it has been shown, for example, in a monitoring study in Multnomah County, when they deprived disabled of benefits, that in a population of 840 disabled folks who were denied essential medications, the mortality rate that was high to start with has quintupled in half a year. That means we are dealing here literally with issues of life and death. Another comment is, you may see that there are very few disabled people here, and even though I'm disabled myself, I used to be frustrated. Why don't the disabled show in more numbers? The answer is very simple. Every little trip, like coming to this meeting, is a major chore for a disabled, and something that for a temporarily able-bodied person is done without thinking is a major project for a disabled person. So that is one of the reasons that you will not see too many disabled people. Other reasons are the cultural aspects of fear, shame, and despair. So I hope that in this session, all of us, both the legislature, the DHS, and we will make a much better job than was done in 2003, where things were done in such a hectic and messy way that have created an impossible solution. We are trying to work now with the legislatures on a more individual basis to rectify some of these wrongs. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Dave Toller. I'm chair of the Three Rivers School Board and also sit on the steering committee for the Coalition for Schools. I want to thank you for taking the long drive and saving that drive for us. I want to acknowledge what a difficult task you have before you. You face a simple problem. Expenses exceed income, but the solutions are not so easy. Last night, the Three Rivers School Board passed a resolution that calls for a solution to Oregon's budget woes. The centerpiece of our resolution recognizes that fiscal discipline is the only way out of Oregon's budget mess. But we have a serious problem here. We have over $8.6 billion in tax income expenditures that the Oregon House leadership refuses to recognize as even being expenditures. These are nearly 200 income tax breaks that Oregon law says we must consider as expenses. It's not just Oregon law, it's common sense. Unless you've been to Enron accounting school, you know that when you take money out of your coffers and you spend them, it's called an expenditure. But many in the legislature say no, these expenditures are not really expenditures at all. The results are runaway tax expenditures that have risen over 105% in the last 10 years. The results are a loss of $1.3 billion in revenue, more than enough to solve our budget problem today. Oregon's budget problems are here because we have lost our fiscal discipline. I applaud you for practicing some discipline towards the $12 billion in state program expenditures, but too many of you are omitting any hint of discipline over the $8.6 billion in other expenditures. The results are an Oregon budget crisis that is hurting our economic potential, our children, and our seniors. Fiscal discipline. That's the Oregon solution. The sooner you begin to practice full discipline, the sooner we're going to arrive at an Oregon solution. Thank you.
Thank you. On deck, Don Brulin, Dave Gilmer, Bill Snell, and Jack Groves.
I'm
do we wind up with Tom?
Go ahead, sir.
We still have one chair.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jim Sims. I'm an attorney in Jackson County. I think I'm the only attorney who handles cases for the disabled that are receiving funding for their in-home care through the Department of Human Services and the Disability Services Office. What concerns me is that these people are the most vulnerable. And having served on the Ashland Schools Foundation Board of Directors, I know what great advocates parents can be. And I know what great advocates students can be. In fact, I know what great advocates able-bodied people, or TABs, as Dr. Jacoby referred to them as, can be. The problem is that the disabled that I see are not great advocates. And so the burden falls really, really heavily on you and on me. On me because I have to represent them, and on you because you are the ones who are going to provide the funding necessary for the quality of life of these people. And the laws that you put together are the laws that I have to serve them with. And what I've seen over the last 2 years really frightens me, because I know that your concept is that only the least disabled should not receive funding. But the people that I'm representing who are being defunded are people who can't walk. They're crawling, and they're called fully able-bodied. Multiple impairments. There is legislation now going through the House to help a little bit. But without your conscientious support for these people who can't defend themselves, they don't have anybody to represent them in Salem. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Leslie Meyer. I'm a member of the Three Rivers School Board, and I'm also a mom. And I'm here and sitting here in this room with so many people representing so many worthwhile programs. I think I know how members of the Donner Party felt, and I do not like it. And I want to say I don't think it has to be this way. I want to echo what my fellow board member said about looking at tax expenditures in the form of tax breaks. I want to let you know that for our district, we're basing our budget right now on the $5.2 billion figure. At that amount, besides a whole host of little cuts and administrative cuts, we're looking at losing a teacher at each of our middle and high schools, which will include losing a French program at one of our high schools, any advanced Spanish classes. We will have classes at our middle schools at over 30 students. We already have classes in our elementary level of up to 35 students in a couple of our elementary schools. It will also mean the loss of 8 instructional days. As a mother, I want to say I impress on my children the importance of a good education. I try to tell them that. I've told them that since they were young, but that's not what they're hearing from the state. That's not what they're hearing from their leadership. I beg you to give my children a chance. They're in 8th and 9th grade. All they have known are school cuts. They've had to worry about their small rural school being closed. They don't have time. They don't have 4 or 5 years for us to come up with a solution. This is their one shot at an education, and I implore you to do what it takes to give my children and all the children in this state a decent education. Thank you, and thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Bill Snell. I've been a member of the Jackson Josephine County Senior Advisory Council coming on to 6 years now. And I speak tonight. First of all, I'd like to thank all of you for being here. It's just so great to see so many of you devoting your time to this endeavor. I'll speak on in-home care. In-home care, the governor recommended limiting the number of people who can receive in-home care to 21,000. The House Budget institutes the cap. The Senate removes the cap. A cap on services means that regardless of how many people are in need, and are eligible for services, the actual number of service cannot go over 21,000. This translates into waiting list for new enrollees and two options. Go without help until their number comes up, or proceed to a nursing facility, which is a much more expensive option. The alternative would also cost the state $94 million in matching funds. I encourage you to consider these in your deliberations. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
My name is Bill Eckhart. I'm the executive director for the Fruit Growers League of Jackson County. I want to thank you all for being here. I would like to speak in support of the Oregon State University Southern Oregon Research and Extension Center. As you travel around the state, you're going to hear appeals from all of the rural areas that have extension and experiment stations. It's very important to those communities, and I hope you will remember the spirit of the land-grant university system that created these. It is, frankly, an oxymoron to centralize extension. So with that in mind, I know you'll be hearing over and over again how communities are impacted in such a positive way and have been historically by the presence of the land-grant opportunities in their communities. It wasn't that long ago in our nation's history that the economist Adam Smith spoke of the invisible hand of motivated self-interest. And that invisible hand has repeatedly entered the polling place in Oregon, and Oregonians have said, we don't want more taxes. 2 years ago, our local people gathered together in the commercial ag industry, and we helped raise funding privately to keep research happening in our valley. So as much as possible, if you can keep the presence of these institutions in our community, I believe you will see the private sector with motivated self-interest enter the conversation and come to the conference table in a productive fashion. Thank you again.
Thank you very much. On deck, we'll have Diane Seitz, Erica Ochoa, can I butcher these, sorry, Colin Murphy, and Sarah Davis, please. Please begin.
Good evening. I'm Jack Groves, and I have been an extension volunteer for the last 5 years. The governor's current budget proposal is continuing to take us down a path of diminishing the OSU Extension Program. The Agricultural Experiment Station, Extension Service, and Forest Research Laboratory have experienced a 13% reduction since the 2001-2003 biennium. In Jackson County, we have lost a 0.6 full-time equivalent extension agent for the urban horticulture program and have been given a 0.2 full-time equivalent multitask agent. Thus, we are not able to get the instruction and leadership available in past years. This has meant that current members of the program have to teach the courses that would normally be taught by expert OSU employees. In addition, we have found it necessary to hire a clerical aide from funds that have been used in the past for outreach and community education. Why is OSU Urban Horticulture Program important to Jackson County? It educates the public on the proper use of pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, and fertilizers in order to avoid health hazards and pollution of groundwater. Jackson County continues to have a strong commercial agriculture base, and thus it is important for the home orchardist to properly spray their apple and pear trees in order to prevent infestations of coddling moss and fire blight. In a season of drought, as we have this year, the program helps people to water more efficiently and to use landscape plants that require a minimum of water and fertilizer and pesticide. A major function of urban horticulture is to help people grow their own healthy food. There is not only the benefit of highly nutritious vegetables, but the exercise gain from gardening.
Thank you. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. I'm Dave Gilmore, physician and Jackson County Commissioner. And first, I'd like to say a few words to get away from this thing. Hopefully to help prevent you from being at this table 2 years from now listening to the same conversation. As a former school board member, it never made sense to me to have each district negotiating about medical insurance. That's something that probably should be taken off the table at the individual district level and should be negotiated statewide, because look at the clout that you'd have if you had all the teachers in the state, all the classified employees of the state bargaining and actually negotiating with insurance companies. That probably could save an enormous amount of money and also give you much more clout to get actually better benefits. Health and Human Services, I also served as a health officer for 15 years in Jackson County, and I can attest that our inefficiencies at the state level. Unfortunately, you lost quite an opportunity last year when an efficiency committee was established to look in Health and Human Services, and it was disbanded because the people within the committee felt very, very discouraged because they couldn't look at the whole department's budget but just a small portion of it. John Ramsey, who is from our county, I would actually encourage all of you to talk to John. If you can't get hold of him, your Representative Richardson or Senator Bates can get information on how to get hold of him. A tremendous amount of money can be saved in the future, allow us to preserve programs and do things more efficiently. Finally, I'd like to add my support to the Extension Service. In our county, it actually fills in gaps. And the gaps it's filled are some very surprising places. We've gotten lots of computers through the Gates Foundation in many districts, but have had nobody to teach the kids how to use them. We've had an employee of the Extension Service do that throughout districts, throughout our county. I was going to say more, but I can't. I'm sorry about that.
Thank you very much.
My name is Don Bruland, and I'm Director of Senior and Disability Services for the Rogue Valley Council of Governments. First, thank you for coming down to our area to talk with us and listen to us. I recognize that you are faced with an extremely difficult task in balancing a budget where there are more needs than resources at this point. I would urge you to consider the following things. Please do not cap community-based services, further reduce OPI, end relative foster care, cut dental services under Oregon Health Plan, or further cut general assistance. The reason is simple. It's going to end up costing you more money. If you're lucky in the long run, but quite likely in the short run. Finally, I would like you to consider the future. The costs will continue to rise in long-term care if we aren't taking better care of ourselves. You have a proposal under Oregon Project Independence to expand how we work with younger people and with people who are not on services to help them better take care of themselves and look for the future. In our district, we have been working with the OSU Extension Service to provide classes for people to better take care of themselves and their chronic conditions. We're finding that that is a way to cut costs. So as we look at the present needs, let us not forget the future needs and look towards prevention. That is one of your responsibilities and one of all of our responsibilities in government service. Thank you.
Thank you. On deck, Bob Rasgen, Sally Cumberworth, Tracy Geddes, and Charles Boyer. Please begin.
Hello, my name is Bob Brazo.
I manage a program at Living Opportunities here in the Valley. We're a nonprofit agency, and we serve people with developmental disabilities, which means primarily mental retardation. The funding for developmental disabilities has been frozen for 4 years, and during those 4 years, our operating expenses and benefits have risen dramatically. Our medical insurance premiums have risen 45 to 60% in the last 4 to 5 years. We've moved from $250 to $300 deductibles to $2,000 deductibles in order to afford the insurance. The result is increasing staff turnover. Statewide turnover is 60% according to the Department of Human Service figures. Our turnover has been lower generally but has not been under 40% in the last 7 to 8 years. Last year, though, we topped 50%. Applications are dropping, and with 4 to 5 openings a month, we cannot fill positions. We're caring for people who require almost total assistance in our group homes. People are working a great deal of overtime at very low wages and heavy responsibility. It's no wonder that many leave for jobs with less pressure. Is not the value of their work very, very high? The governor's budget has a small COLA in it, which we appreciate, but it simply won't come near resolving the crisis created by being frozen for 4 years and facing such huge cost increases. We're asking for $8 million in general fund for direct care wages. And I guess just overall, I'd like to say that there just simply is not enough money to cover all the supports necessary, and I thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
My name is Diane Seitz. For the past 8 years, I have been a volunteer at the Southern Oregon Research and Extension Center, and I am only one of many people who each year volunteer hundreds of hours of their time for the programs of the Extension Service. Most of the programs at Extension focus on education. They reach people of all ages, from the very popular youth program called 4-H to programs for the aged, people who need to learn to eat better and the quality of exercise. Extension Service serves people of all income levels, all backgrounds, people who live in both urban and rural settings. And this program has gone on for nearly 100 years. Where is the best place to go if you want a program on organic gardening? Where you want information about your plants? Why are they disease-ridden? You go to the Extension Service for research-based, environmental, safe applications. You may go there if you want help or if you want to take extensive classes. This week, I clicked on an email I received from a reputable nursery with which I have done business. They gave me lots of advice and lots of information. But in the end, they said, for fungal diseases on fruit trees, go to the Extension Service. We do not have the localized information that they do. Please feel it is an obligation on your part to no longer continue to cut Extension Service programs. We need those agents. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. For the record, my name is Erica. I'm a student at Southern Oregon University. I'm a freshman and majoring in criminology. I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for the Oregon Opportunity Grant. I was brought to the United States when I was 6 years old. My parents brought me here. I found myself in a country foreign to myself, leaving behind everything except the importance to an education. I found that very important. Seeing my parents working in the fields, making the fields of the United States flourish like they have today. I don't want to get emotional.
You're okay.
I'm good. My story is not unique. Students who received the grant, at current funding levels, even students who qualify and meet the local income requirements may not receive the grant due again to funding. It's students like me from low-income
low-income families who need to get this grant. I mean, education, as you guys all know, those of you guys who have children, is the key to success. If we don't have that key, we're not going to open any doors, and we're not going to get anywhere. So, and just for closing, Senate Bill 769 just got into your committee, and I strongly support, and I cannot emphasize enough, 769 needs to pass, the importance of it. And, again, the education is a key to success. 769 would allow that, as well as the Oregon Opportunity Grant. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Sarah Davis, and I'm here with Wayne Robinson. He'd like to say hello. I have worked with Wayne for about 12 years, and I work for Living Opportunities, and we provide services for people with disabilities. And I have to tell you that I don't really hire staff. I hire family members. And the staff that I have, they provide services. They give people baths and brush people's teeth and do all the things that you would want a family member to do for you. I know that you don't intend to take away services from a person like this because he needs a lot of care. But what I'm telling you is when I can't retain staff, when I can't keep those staff working for me, people like Wayne get hurt. And what happens when they get hurt is they have to go to nursing homes. And nursing homes are very expensive. And Wayne's been there, and Wayne almost died there. And he only lived because he came home. So it's really important that you understand that being able to hire and retain staff at a level where I can keep staff that have a good quality, that they will stay with me for at least 2 or 3, or if not 5 years, that's a quality of life for Wayne. That's a quality of life for the people that I deal with. So don't think that you're not hurting this person when you don't give people with disabilities money, because you really are, because I'm not able to keep those staff that actually are family members to Wayne. So I appreciate your coming here, and I appreciate Wayne coming here to represent himself.
Thank you. Next group on deck will be Wally Segerman, Ron Meyer,
I do.
Jeff Scarf, and Robert Lee. Segerman, Meyer, Sharp, and Lee. Please go ahead.
My name is Sally Cumberworth, and I'm a home care worker. I work for Senior and Disability Services. Many of my clients are homebound. They don't see anybody else but me. I'm their one contact to the rest of the world. I'm the one that takes them to the doctor. I'm the one that goes and buys their groceries. I'm the one that's there for them day in, day out, and I get attached to my people. And when the case manager says, this person no longer qualifies, and we can't pay your salary to be here, and then they are left alone with no one to be there for them, it breaks my heart, it breaks the case manager's heart, and then these people go downhill and end up in homes and cost the state money. We need home care workers banded together because we are isolated. We don't have a work site where we can get together. We formed a union, so that for the first time, I had coworkers, and I felt like I belonged. And I need this committee to understand that when these case managers tell me that we have to reduce your hours in that client's home, and there's nothing we can do. And I have to tell that client that I can only come to your home now twice a week instead of 5 days a week. And it hurts my family because instead of bringing home this much money, I then have a lower paycheck, which means I have to take on another client. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Tracy Geddes. I am from Weimar, Oregon, and I serve on the Rogue River School Board. I have two children in the district. Thank you all for coming down. We are just entering our budget process, and I have sympathy for you. It's exponential what this committee has to do. Rogue River was invited to present testimony to the education subcommittee. I would encourage you to review that. My superintendent and I were there, and we're glad to share information. I would like to come here tonight and encourage you to take a common sense approach. You're hearing from many different agencies, and all of us are saying to you, we have streamlined, we have been efficient, we have cut costs, we are no longer at any ability to have discretionary spending. And I want you to think as private citizens, if you have gone through your personal budget, you've cut out your cell phone, you've cut out your cable, you've cut out your internet access, everything that could be cut out, and yet your expenditures, your bills, your mortgage, your car payment is still more than your income, as a private citizen, you would go find another job. And you are our chosen leaders. We elected you to go find more revenue because it's becoming apparent, especially with small districts. We have a superintendent who is doing three jobs administratively. We have made efficiencies. We've made all the efficiencies we can. As we're entering the budget process, I have been warned that at our next budget meeting, all of the student athletes will show up in their uniforms and demand that we cut our music program so that they will have sports. I don't think that's a position any of you want to be in, considering our music teacher at the high school is right now a part-time position, and the a cappella choir is receiving accolades for their rendition of the Star-Spangled Banner. I encourage you to please go find more revenue to create more revenue. That is the answer to the problem of the agencies that are testifying to you tonight. Thank you.
My name is Charlie Boyer. I'm a farmer. And I'm glad that you all came down here because it's hard for me to get to Salem and talk to you guys. And I'd like to go on the record as requesting that the Oregon State Legislature to fully fund the Oregon State University's Agricultural Experiment Station's Extension Service and the Forest Research Laboratory. In 1991, my wife and I purchased the farm that we have near Eagle Point. We use management-intensive grazing for our sheep, our grass-finished sheep operation, and we use scientifically-based practices for our haying operations on there. Between 1991 and 2003, we could expect for anywhere from 6 to 10 workshops and classes each year to help us improve our operations. These workshops and classes helped us with the soil management, water management, pasture layout and design, animal health management, marketing, how to market our products, and even enterprise evaluation, just to mention a few of the things that we were able to get. Since the budget cuts to OSU in 2003 and 2004, we're lucky if we get two educational opportunities here a year in those areas. And one of the reasons we get that is because we lost three scientists from the local facilities here in Central Point. And one of those positions was our livestock and forage management specialist, Jackson-Josephine counties, and that's being filled by a person located in Roseburg, and she is responsible for 6 counties. So what's this got to do with everything? According to the statistics, Jackson County has 1,953 farms with a gross sales of $71,298,000. With a multiplier effect, that's 2.5. These farms produce
quite a bit.
A lot. And that's money that's available to these other services, and that's the key. And I'll leave these. I'd like to leave this with someplace.
Please do.
Someplace.
Please do. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Good evening. My name is Colin Murphy. I'm Student Body Vice President at Southern Oregon University. I'm just here to speak with you quickly, bring in to the light with my testimony the positive aspects of higher education. I know there's a lot of negative things going around about, you know, tuition increases and all that that entails. But as a senior reflecting back on my experience, I just realize how what an opportunity it's been for me to go through higher education, what a privilege it's been. And as a representative for students, I've been able to work with a lot of students from underrepresented populations that because of state funding and because of access opportunity, they're having opportunities they never dreamed of, and they're able to go forward even after baccalaureate work into PhD programs to become major contributors to their communities and to society as a whole. And so just briefly, you know, invest in education, invest in access, invest in Oregon. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next group on deck, Karen Solent, Katie Bartel, Roger West, and Brian Allen. Go ahead, please. Yes.
My name is Robert Lee. I'm a junior nursing student with OHSU. We have an extension campus down here from the Portland campus. I recognize a lot of your faces because I've come up to Salem and bugged you up there, too. I just want to kind of go with what Colin said, in that I've been given the wonderful opportunity to gain a higher education in a field that has growth and shows potential for much continued growth for the state of Oregon. The more nurses we have, the more employed nurses we will have. Those are people who contribute tax dollars back to the state and provide more money for all these other programs that are seeking funds. It's an investment in Oregon's future to fund OHSU, particularly because the money that comes from the state goes to educational programs. It doesn't go to funding the big research projects up on Pill Hill in Portland. It goes to subsidizing and helping to pay for schooling for people like myself. I value it very much, but with the proposed cuts, even with the addition that the governor proposed 2 weeks ago, we're still looking at anywhere from I've heard 40 to 90% tuition increase next year alone. That puts a baccalaureate degree in nursing out of reach of many people, particularly as we're trying to increase the diversity within our program. It puts that education out of reach for many people. That's a major concern for me. As an Oregonian, I want to live in a place where education, healthcare, and the environment are all priorities, and where that is demonstrated by the acts of the people who I vote for. And I see my time's running out. She's got her hand on the red card. I want to continue to live here. Those things are important to me, and thank you for your time. Thank you for coming down and meeting me halfway.
Thank you.
I'm Ron Meyer. I'm a third-generation pear grower here in the Rogue Valley, and your effort and sacrifice in being here tonight is certainly appreciated. I'm here in support of the Ag Research Station budget as well as extension because they are important partners. And to demonstrate the value that we growers place upon them, we have contributed to their operating even after last biennium budget cuts. Further cuts will probably mean their demise locally. And these contributions were made in a time when the industry is strapped economically itself because of foreign imports, which makes all the more important the leading edge technology that we can have to compete with these foreign competitors. We cannot do it on labor or regulatory. We have to be at the leading edge of science to produce economically and first quality. Not only did we contribute to the operation, but in 1993, it shared one-third of the cost of the experiment station expansion. The pear industry contributes about $38 million to the local economy. The Valley's largest employer, its core of business, is growing pears. And it is one means of maintaining open space, which most Valley residents appreciate. So my question is, I would hope all of you ask yourself when you make your decision, will the demise of this industry here mean better budget to picture in the future? And once this industry leaves the Valley, it will not return.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Wally Skirman, and I'm a resident of Central Point. And I'm sorry for the need to be here tonight, but I appreciate you coming. The old joke, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help you, is not a joke with our OSU Extension Service, Forest Research Labs, and Agricultural Experiment Stations. For 100 years, 4-H has been a educational experience for thousands of Oregon's youth. My introduction came nearly 50 years ago when I was in a 4-H forestry club that was led by my parents. Years later, after becoming a small woodland owner, I connected with the Jackson County's first forestry extension agent, Alan Campbell. Through the many programs presented, I have gained what I feel is a pretty good understanding of the problems of being a good steward for our land. The information advanced and advice presented is backed by scientific method and logic without hidden agendas. Instead of cutting back, we need to expand these programs to reach more people who are moving into rural areas with urban backgrounds. If you were to design a program that helps people help themselves, you could do no better than to implement what we here have in the U.S. OSU Extension Service, Forest Research Labs, and Experiment Stations. For these programs to be asked to endure more budget cuts is wrong if we are to claim to be a progressive society and the richest nation on the earth.
Thank you.
My name is Kate Backstead, and I'm the director of a DAZL, a Center for Independent Living and Drop-In Center that serves people with all types of disabilities. And the first thing is I can tell you is they are terrified that they're going to end up in nursing homes, just terrified. With capping community services, they're being denied education and the ability to go to work because they need help. I did graduate from our education system here in 96, and I appreciate it. I don't know how we could do it today, so I really, really support them, too, because it's needed for our community. But we can't cut the budget on the backs of the students, which are the future, or the most. And I hate to see the most vulnerable. They're only vulnerable because we don't let them be stronger, I think. And they come to DAZL and serve each other as best they can, and taking even away their medications and their health plan is taking away their strength and everything. So please. And general assistance. I mean, it's nothing. And they need that, too. We're having nothing but homeless sweeps around here. General assistance can get these people into cheap housing instead of on the streets.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next group on deck, Dagberto Morales, Bill Brown, Charles Hellman, and Joni Parsons. Please begin.
Okay.
My name is Blaine Allen. I'm a detective with the Oregon State Police. What I'm here to do tonight is just ask you to consider what your priorities are for the state of Oregon. Prioritize what we've got out there. We've got education. We've got state police. We've got senior services. Prioritize that. Fund these things first before you fund some of these other issues that I don't think anybody in here really wants you to fund. They're here for education. They're here for seniors. They're here for state troopers. We're not here to buy paintings and bend or something else. We all have to do budgets, and we need for you folks, our elected officials, to do that. When you drove down here, how many state troopers did you see on the highway when you drove down? Two. Now you hit a fat spot. I'm sure Senator Courtney saw one getting through the crash that held him up. Representative Richardson has been out with me at night. Right now, we're at less than 50% of what we were in the 80s. I've got a trooper standing back here behind me that works in Grants Pass. His closest cover is 40 minutes away. It's not right. We can't hardly protect ourselves when there's not a single one of us that wouldn't do anything to protect anybody in this room and their families. And we're asking that you do a little bit for us also and protect us. Simply prioritize what's out there, fund those things, do the best you can with what you have. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, sir.
Good evening. My name is Bill Brown, and I'm a CASA volunteer. I'm here as the voice of my children for whom I've sworn to advocate. The issue I wish to address at this hearing is not about money. It's about saving the lives of abandoned, abused, and damaged children. I'm a court-appointed advocate for a family of three sexually molested children who are at this moment under the care of intense psychological programs in order to overcome severe damage caused by children who did not care. I care, and so should you. Until you've looked into the eyes of a child who has been betrayed and moved from foster home to foster home, you will never understand the need for support of these children by the very system that was created to protect them and now prepares to abandon them. Until you've listened to the stories of physical and sexual abuse from the mouths of these children, you will never understand the need for support of these children from the system that was created to protect them and now prepares to abandon them. Until you've seen the fear in the eyes of a child who must testify against the abusers and who are the parents of these children, you will never understand the need for support of these children from the very system that was created to protect them and now prepares to abandon them. These children have been abandoned by their parents, and now the state government agency that was created to protect them prepares to abandon them. Do not abandon them. If our children is not important, who is? You use the politically correct phrase, vulnerable children. I strongly resent the use of this antiseptic term that makes it more palatable and prefer the more honest and direct phrase, damaged, molested, abandoned, abused, physically and psychologically injured, and potentially lost. Thank you.
Thank you.
And ladies and gentlemen of the committee, my name is Roger Wirt. I'm a student senator at Southern Oregon University. First of all, I'd like to thank you all for coming here today. You've given a lot of people today an opportunity to address your committee that they wouldn't have otherwise had, and it's very much appreciated. I had the opportunity to work in the Oregon legislature in the 2003 biennium in the office of Senator Richard Devlin. Unfortunately, he's not here today, but it really gave me an opportunity, especially as the session drug on and on and on some more, to see just how much hard work you all put in, and I'd like you to know that you're very much appreciated and your efforts do not go unnoticed. Basically, I'll be brief since so many points have already been covered four or five times and let you know that I'm here to say that higher education is very, very important to the state of Oregon. We're highest in poverty and highest in hunger, and if anything's been proven, it's that an educated populace will enter the workforce and increase our market, increase revenues in the economy. It'll generally turn around the sickest of situations. My criminology professor is in the audience back there tonight, and if I've learned one thing in his class, it's that an educated populace is not a crime-ridden populace. I think that's something very important to mention. Here's just a few examples, but I think we need to realize that a strong education is the foundation of a strong state. It's something that we can work towards and we can achieve, but we need your help. I haven't been in SOU very long. I recently transferred here from Portland State, only been here a few weeks, but I don't quite know our slogan here at SOU, but at PSU we stood very strongly behind the let knowledge serve the city. And I'm asking you today to please let knowledge serve the state.
Thank you.
Thank you for those great words. My name is Karen Salant, and I live in the Applegate Valley near Rouge. I'm a representative of a small rural school that's hanging on by its fingernails. And I don't have anything further to say because I think this gentleman here has said everything, and I'd like to yield that time.
Thank you very much. On deck, next group on deck, Kim Dunbar, Nikki Ketchum, Susan Featherstone, Doreen McCormick. Please begin.
Hi, my name is Dagoberto Morales. Everything I hear today is remind me in 1960s with Martin Luther King, but only Martin Luther King fight for basic rights. Now we're fighting for surviving, and this time in the hard life. My name is Dagoberto, and I work for migrant workers and immigrants or farm workers. And I just want to remind about how much the farm workers and immigrants contribute to our economy locally and statewide. And also, I want to remind you, it's a lot of some legislations don't kind of value or work or contribution we made on our state. And it's a lot of things to try to minimize the minimum wage for farm workers, workers with tips. I hope you guys don't support that kind of initiative. It's been proposed to try to eliminate people who has no valid social security to drive in the state of Oregon. It has been a lot of proposal has been not very friendly for immigrants. And also it's good in our proposals has been submitted, like for example, Mr. Corney did one last year and they reintroduced the new the same proposal this year. And this is the reason I'm calling today to try to value all immigrants. We come for all immigrants. We are all immigrants. This is why we speak English. The otherwise, we might speak other language. We can learn from here. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Charles Hellman. I'm superintendent in Rogue River School District here in Jackson County. And thank you for coming here to listen to us. I want you to know that we have three counties of excellent schools, Jackson, Josephine, and Klamath County, and a quality ESD that serves us. However, we are struggling to maintain and sustain the excellent results that we've achieved over the many years with school reform. Rogue River, for instance, has cut already 25% of its teaching staff from 1997. That's from 80 teachers to 60. You can imagine the impact that means to us. When the governor proposes a budget that is 70% of the quality education model, you can place a grade on that and understand that it truly is inadequate. The most poignant moment for me at the board meeting when we were discussing our cuts was when a student, a high school student, stood up. And if you can picture her looking at us, who were talking about the cuts that we were going to propose for this year, for next year, and the year after, saying to us, pleading with us, not to cut anything further because she wanted to have her quality education. She was looking to the adults in the room for leadership and pleas, and I guess I'm representing her with our own frustration and plea for you to look at a funding level that you can make at the highest level possible. We've heard 5.4. We would take that rather than 5.1, of course. Look ahead in 2 years for the next biennium. Where will we be? So please look at the issue today. I think revenue is our issue, and we need your help. Thank you.
Mr. Hellman, question for you, please.
Yes.
According to the sheet that we received, the report from the Oregon Department of Education, Rogue River School District has a 23.8% ending fund balance.
Correct.
Why are you reducing if you have a 23.8% ending fund balance?
We reduced because we carried that funding over in order to sustain a program, but our expenditures far exceed even what we were able to preserve. Remember that in the last 3 years, well, you wouldn't remember, but in the last 3 years, we didn't receive about $1 million in anticipated funds because of the special session cutback and also the failure of Measure 30. So we, anticipating those, we simply preserved while we're also cutting back. In fact, we're looking at further cuts in this next biennium as well. So the anticipated savings was merely to reduce the impact of cuts beyond the ones that we're proposing. It was prudent funding.
Also prayers. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Good evening. My name is Joni Parsons, and I serve as an administrator in District 9. That's out in the Eagle Point area. I just want to start by telling you that neither one of my parents graduated from high school. They both had an eighth grade education, and it was very important to them that their children be educated. And I need to tell you that we're not doing that for Oregon's kids. My parents said we want more for you than we had for ourselves. And I can tell you as a building administrator, we're not doing that for Oregon's kids. There are things that we've had to cut since the recent legislation that's gone forward that has really changed the lives of our kids. And I would tell you that kids are smarter than they have ever been before. And they also have more stress than they've ever had before. And the job that we're trying to do with parents to prepare them is just frankly not getting done because of the cuts that we've had. What I'd ask for you today is for adequate and stable funding. One of the things that we've realized with the cuts is that we need to become more problem, we need to become more solution-oriented and be better problem solvers. What I would suggest for you today or encourage you is to take a look at tax reform. I think that we need to be examining everything that there is and that we can't rely on all of our social services and things to be funded on the backs of those who work and those who own property. So I really encourage you to take a look at that. Another thing is, as I said, I'm from District 9. That's the Eagle Point School District. We've had incredible growth in our community. That's the good news. You might think that that means that a lot of money is coming our way, and frankly, we haven't really seen a lot of that. But the reason why I bring up the growth is I want to encourage you to think about a systems development charge for schools. As you know, with growth, you have when people pull permits to build, they pay systems development charges for streets and sewers and water and all those things. And I would just encourage you to look at systems development charges for schools for that infrastructure. Thank you.
Ms. Parsons, same question to you. You're carrying a, or your district, 22.9% ending fund balance.
At the end of the year, I believe that we're going to be looking at about, well, I'm not sure it's going to be quite that much by the time we get to the end of the year because we're not finished. However, adding to what Mr. Hellman said, one of the things that we're really prepared for is the PERS. We're not sure what's going to happen with that. And we're hoping to add some things back. At my school, I have a custodian every other day because we just don't have the money for that, don't have a counselor. The answer to your question is we've been holding on in preparation for what's going to happen in the next biennium.
If you're funded at 5.2 or 5.4, pick a number, how much of your ending fund balance will you have to use?
I didn't bring it with me, but I believe that we're going to go down at least $1.3 million, I think, into what we were planning on carrying over.
So that will still put you about 18% over, of 18%.
If what you're looking at is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Co-Chair? Mr. Co-Chair, may I?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
If you were to take the ending fund balances that you have now and spend them in order to make it through this current year, mm-hmm. and didn't have those to roll over, and then next year experienced further cuts, what would happen to you?
We would have to close the doors. And we'd go back to what we did a few years ago when we cut 10 days, cut out all of our instructional assistants, cut our teaching staff. And some of the other solutions that some of the people have said here tonight, I really would encourage you to look at, like the health care. I mean, health care has gone up 110%. I'd love to have that kind of raise, but I know that our health care professionals aren't getting it either. But maybe a state plan or something would be a good idea.
The only reason that I'm asking these questions that in the budget process, we have, in the state of Oregon's budgets, we are in other funds accounts looking at to have between 3 and 4 months worth of operating cash in their account, which, you know, is somewhere in the 12% range or something. So when we're just trying to find some information as to why these percentages are being carried at the rate that they are.
Sure.
Thanks.
Yeah, and I think it's a scarcity mentality too. You know, so fearful that everything is going to be gone. Let's hold on tight. Thank you.
Thank you. Next group that to be on deck: Amy Ammerheim, Chuck Kyle, Steve Thorpe, and Dan Davis. Please begin.
My name is Susan Featherstone, and I thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you tonight. I live in Rogue River, and my son attends Evans Valley Elementary School. I am a school volunteer, a SMART volunteer. I'm an officer in the school PTA, and I serve on the Rogue River School District Vision Committee. I wish I was before you tonight to ask that you do not cut education funding so we could continue our great small class sizes and our wonderful music and art and PE programs. However, we don't have any of those. So I find I'm before you to ask that you do not cut any more from the already inadequate funding our schools receive. Sadly, our children are currently getting a bare-bones education, and further budget cuts will only exacerbate this problem. At the elementary level, most of the class sizes exceed appropriate levels, and our hardworking teachers are continually expected to do more with less. The situation created by years of inadequate funding from the state does not allow for anything more than the most basic education. With the funding you propose, our children will slip further behind and our teachers and staff will become more overburdened, frustrated, and burned out. I regularly attend Rogue River School District Board meetings, so I know our district runs lean. We have nothing left to cut. If you fund education at a level less than $5.6 billion, our district will be forced to cut school days, teachers, support staff, classes, and extracurricular activities. I urge you to fund education at an appropriate level to provide a quality education to the children of Oregon. Thank you for coming here tonight.
Thank you.
I'm Noreen McCormick, and I am here to suggest that you restore the $10 million to the extension research budget that has been cut in the past two biennia. Those programs are outstandingly successful. They reach people of all ages. They've been copied all over the world. They reach people of all income levels, all segments of society. They're good for all families, and they are supported by a very wide variety of families with a wide variety of income sources. They're successful in rural areas, in urban settings, in suburban locations, and in the inner city. And I personally have worked with populations from all of those locations. Thank you for coming, but I do want you to feel that we are sincere about needing the encouragement to continue successful programs. If restoring the $10 million to the extension research budget would bring the budget back to the beginning level of 2001, that would be $10 million very well spent. The population of Oregon is about 3.5 million citizens, give or take a little. For $3 each in the budget restoration in the next biennium, this remarkable program could be restored to a solid financial state. That cost is only $1.50 a year per citizen. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Kim Dunbar, and I'm the president of the Jackson County 4-H Leaders Association. I also am asking you to support the Research and Extension Station here. I think most people traditionally think of 4-H as home economics and animal science, and that's true. That's the traditional program. However, we have some very successful non-traditional programs that I want you to be aware of, one being a specialized Latino program here. It started last year, and we had 300 Latino members registered. We provided an 8-week, 5-day-a-week day camp last summer for them, and it is centered on computers and cultural studies. We have a forestry and natural resources program. We implemented a wildlife steward program at Griffin Creek Elementary. We have a business information technology program. And they're working, the natural resources and the business information are working together. They put on a global positioning workshop for the children of our valley. We have a Sam's Valley Elementary After School program. This program is designed to help provide after school care for these kids in a rural setting. The high risk times are 3 to 6 p.m. before parents get home. This program provides a safe place for those kids to be. We have school enrichment programs. We're bringing specialized education into the schools, and we're really struggling. We have been cut so bad in the last few years, and if we could just be restored back to our 2001-2003 level, I think that we could continue to provide these very well-needed services. Thank you for coming down here.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Mickey Ketchum, and I'm a 7-year volunteer member of the Commission on Children and Families. I'm here to speak to Senate Bill 5505, and I respectfully disagree with Senator Schrader's cuts to the Commission on Children and Families as a false economy. I've heard from many that what they want is accountability in how money is spent. CC&F does that. When Commission on Children and Families disperses funds, which are often only a small part of a nonprofit's budget, they use the money to leverage other funds. We then ask them for a clear set of objectives, and then CC&F physically goes out and monitors the program to see that the money is efficiently and wisely spent. So Commission on Children and Families goes to see that the very vulnerable, at-risk kids get the programs that they deserve. Thank you.
Thank you. Next group on deck, Kathleen McNeil, Karen Starchwich, Roger King, and Lee Franks.
Hi, my name is Dan Davis, and I live in the Applegate Valley. I'm a businessman, and so I have no specific program to talk about. But as a businessman in my previous business, I traveled in 53 countries and 50 states. And whenever I came home, I realized that I live in such a great country that I don't mind paying taxes. And taxes are the price that we pay for living in a civilized society. Since 1980, there seems to be an ideology that has come to the forefront that personal wealth has priority over our obligations to society. My American values include fully funding our society needs, including human services, public safety, and education, among other things. Many people help pay for my education and my children's education. I couldn't have paid for it by myself. Those people paid taxes to do that. And that's the way our system works. To not find ways to enhance revenues needed is, to me, totally un-American. Some of the Oregon has the lowest, as far as I can determine, the lowest business and corporate taxes, practically the lowest in the country. And the personal taxes are also extremely low. I moved here from New York, and I can attest to that. And, you know, it doesn't bother me. I don't like taxes, don't get me wrong, and none of us do. But, you know, it's part of our obligation to society and to our children. So I'd like to see us return to fairness and equity, common sense, and American values. And some of the tax reform, looking at special exemptions and credits that go on that are not too good. I like the idea of SDCs, and I'm a builder and developer. So SDCs or schools might be something to look at. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Amy Amrine. I am the current chair of the Ashland School Board. I appreciate your efforts for what you're doing with our state budget and encourage you to continue to work together to find adequately fund education, social services, and public safety in the budget. I'd like to tell you a little bit about what has occurred in my school district over the last several years, as you all have been struggling to balance the budget through declining revenues up in Salem. Since the 2001-02 school year, the Ashland School District has greatly reduced its program staffing and expenditures to become more efficient, although I'm not so sure that we feel that our efficiency has resulted in quality education, although we are comfortable with what we're doing. What we have done is reduced overall staffing by 48 positions, thereby increasing class sizes and classified support for students. We have eliminated one period of a block schedule for high school students from 8 to 7 periods. We have cut in half the number of elective classes offered to middle school students. We have closed one elementary school in June of 2003 with another to close this June in response to our declining enrollment of approximately 100 students per year. That equates to approximately $500,000 per year on an ongoing basis. So our situation with a declining funding per student from Salem is being exacerbated by a declining enrollment, which I know is going on in other districts across the state as well. We have cut custodial and maintenance positions to the point that the integrity of our facilities is being compromised. We have reduced district level administration to 2 positions, our superintendent and our business manager. We no longer have a human resources person. We no longer have a curriculum director. We are down to beyond the bare bones, and that has been that way for about 4 years. We have transitioned to a modified self-insurance health program in order to control costs, and we have worked with employee groups to limit cost of living increases. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Chuck Kyle. I'm the vice chair of the Ashland School Board. I'm also a 20-year Navy veteran and a public school graduate. I have pretty good budget experience from my time in the Navy, and I had a good background from that from my public school education. Senator Bates, I think, can attest to my mathematical abilities if you care to get him in a corner sometime. But it's not my mathematical abilities I want to talk about tonight, gentlemen, ladies. It's yours. The public school math that you're not doing so well. The reason we have increased carryover is very simple. In the 2003-2005 current biennium, you gave us more money in the first year than you should have. Guess what? We did the math and we saved it. So you can look. We got an extra $1 million last year. We're spending that million this year because we have to keep from cutting programs. All of these other superintendents and boards have done the same thing. So let's cut the grandstanding. Let's talk about basic math. Let's be patriotic. The men and women I served with on active duty for 20 years were by and large public school educated. They go out in harm's way relying on the education we provide them here. Now, we're doing our best to do that. We need a little help from the legislature. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Steve Thorpe. I'm a faculty member in the School of Education at Southern Oregon University, so I work with teacher education. And similar to, first of all, I also want to thank you for coming down to meet with us this evening and let us speak to you. You've heard from a lot of different groups this evening, health services, human services, education, et cetera. I think the message is pretty clear. We are at a crisis point. And I know this well from education because working in teacher education, I go out to the schools all the time. I'm in the schools represented by these folks here as well as others in the audience. I also serve on the Northwest Association for Accreditation of Schools, so I see these schools intimately. They really are at a crisis point, just as the Health and Human Services agencies are at a crisis point now. How do we go about, how do we deal with these things under these circumstances? We all go for grants. We at Southern Oregon University in the education program have a grant to help with tuition for teachers who want to be special ed teachers. We went for a grant this year. Hopefully we'll get it to help American Indian students come into our teacher education program to enhance diversity in the schools. With Steve Boyarski sitting up here behind me, we have a $1 million grant over 3 years for staff development for American history teachers. Grants will only carry us so far. They're limited in duration. They're limited in scope and ability for use. So like others at the table right here now and others who spoke this evening, I think we need to be like Mitch Daniels. I don't know how much people know about Mitch Daniels, but Mitch Daniels was the budget director for George W. Bush in the first term for President Bush. He was a leader of the tax cut effort at the federal level when he resigned from that position, was elected governor of Indiana, and saw the realities in the state. He went for a tax increase. In contrast to his good friend, Grover Norquist, who was for Americans for Tax Reform, he saw the realities, went for the tax increase, and I'll leave it at that. I could give you other examples of other people who have done the same thing, made the change, the transition to revenue enhancement.
Thank you. Next group to be on deck, Constance Palia, Sue Crater, Don Scudrick, and Geneva Smith.
Genevieve.
Please begin,
Roger.
Please begin.
I'm Roger King. I'm from Eagle Point area, and a few of you I've met before at meetings similar to this. And I agree with everything I've heard tonight about funding specifically to education, health, and police, and the other things too, because they need money, and I'm all for that. I have been active in politics for about 4 years when Measure 28 started and Measure 30, and I was opposed as I learned more and more about the money that's in these agencies that we have, 89 agencies, I think, in the state. I wasn't for new taxes, and I'm still not until the money is used that's setting in some of these agencies, which would be several billion dollars. And you all know that. But the problem is just getting it out of there and getting it to use with these different agencies we've heard tonight. So I'm going to make three suggestions. There's a lot of them, but I only have a couple minutes. PERS needs to be reduced and reconstructed to a defined benefit plan, at least for the new employees in your public retirement system. That's billions of dollars right there. Get it in line with corporate, an average corporation that has benefits. Get it down there. It's way far out right now. The next item is I think an outside audit operation ought to be done like in other states for all the agencies to be audited by somebody other than somebody that's in the agency. Okay, I don't think they're really doing the thing. I think it has to be outside pointing out what's going on in the agencies to the legislature because there's money out there. I know Dennis Richardson agrees with some of what I'm saying. The revenue department, I've mentioned this for 4 years. The revenue department right now has $1.3 billion of uncollected income tax. Okay, now the legislature, the way I understand it, and the union can't really get together and privatize that operation. It needs to be privatized like Minnesota and North Dakota. North Dakota has had it privatized for 20 years, and they have a collection agency go get it. Okay. The lands division has 900. Okay.
Actually, Rob, just for your benefit, we actually have reduced
the PERS situation to a corporate model now for new employees. Courts don't let us do a whole lot more than that. We have certainly tried. My co-chair worked real hard on that. And the Department of Revenue, we have put it out to private collection agencies over the last few years, taking your suggestions. So we're, I think, trying to move in some of the directions you're talking about.
The private, it is privatized now?
We have it.
The $1.3 million?
We have private collection agencies.
$1.3 million. I wasn't aware of that.
Go ahead, ma'am.
Okay. My name is Karen Starchvick. I have two children at Jacksonville Elementary. We all know that Oregon has the not-so-proud distinction of being second to last place in the nation. We have the second shortest school term, second largest class sizes. We're second to the bottom in funding of music education. The first grade class at my children's school is the highest in the district at 33 children. Neither the Republicans nor the Democrats want to fund the level needed to maintain this second to last position. Unbelievably, even as Republicans and Democrats argue about how deeply to cut schools and human services, the House passed another $27 million in special interest tax cuts last week, primarily helping corporations not based in Oregon. Shame on you. The House is now aiming to reduce the long-term capital gains tax, currently at 9% to approximately 5%. When fully phased in, this will reduce general fund revenues by more than $300 million each budget cycle. Where is the money coming from? We are told that a tax break benefiting 15% or less of Oregonians is needed to stimulate the economy. And yet when corporations like Intel are asked why they came to Oregon, taxes are at the bottom of the list. Instead, Intel cited the quality of education. The Congressional Research Service found, quote, there is no apparent relationship between venture capital investments and the capital gains tax, end quote. If cutting taxes was the way to economic prosperity, Alabama would be a wealthy state. If we want to encourage investment in Oregon, we would be better served restoring our education system. As a mother and an advocate for children, I strongly urge you to support no further tax cuts until schools and human services are fully funded at levels to maintain current services. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Kathleen McNeil. I'm the director of the Student Support Services Program at Southern Oregon University. We are a federally funded TRIO grant program. If you were in Salem earlier today, you had about 450 TRIO program students demonstrating at the legislature in support of the opportunity, educational opportunity for low-income, first-generation, and disabled students that these grants provide. But I'm here to tell you that our program at Southern Oregon University serves approximately 10% of the eligible students at Southern Oregon University. There are one-third of the students at Southern Oregon are eligible for our program. It is not enough to have the federal support for low-income first-generation students. We need additional support from the state. I'm asking you to increase the educational opportunity grants that Oregon provides to low-income students. I want to give you a face, and you've already seen one face because you saw Erica Ochoa, who is a member of our program earlier tonight. But recently I talked to a mother who said, do you know how hard it is to look one son in the face and tell him, I cannot help you go to college until your older brother graduates? You'll have to wait. You'll have to go to work. Or another mother who took out a $9,000 Parent Plus loan to send her daughter to school when her total yearly income is $19,000. Please support more grants for low-income students, and also please support the SB 769 bill. It will bring more revenue and more eligible students into the Oregon University system and increase diversity on our campuses. Thank you very much for being here and allowing me to speak and staying after your 9 o'clock deadline.
Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Lee Frakes. I have a 150-acre tree farm outside of Weimar. And I had the distinct honor of being the first one in the state of Oregon to be selected for the reforestation program several years ago. And I mention that because there were just slight twists in that that I think that might be of interest. And that is that I found out that for some reason the power company had sent several thousand dollars into that fund. I was trying to figure out, why is the power company putting money into reforestation? Come to find out, they're buying carbon offsets. A new term to me. Anyway, and with the carbon offsets, in other words, the 7,000 trees that we put in, as you know, trees suck up carbon and give off oxygen, and so they were helping to actually clear the area as far as pollution. Some of the plants that they had were probably a little bit polluting a little bit too much. I also want to indicate that because of that, it made made me think of some new things, which was that there's a lot more to trees than logs and lumber. Air quality and the way of life and the taking care of the habitat and so forth. I also would like to mention, I spent 26 years in the Marine Corps, and one of my duties was at Headquarters Marine Corps, had in charge of assets in excess of $9 billion. And so I know the charges that you have to make and what you have to put up with sometimes. All I'm saying is sometimes you have to step up to the plate and make the right decision, because you have to put the bucks where you get the best return. Thank you.
Thank you. Next group on deck, Karen Niebuhr, Tanya Blocky, Eileen Addy, and Mary Hanglin. Evelyn, okay.
My name is Constance Palaya, and I came prepared probably to say something else, and so many people have said it so much better than me. I have a 5-year-old child in public school, and I'm so committed to public school and public education, and I feel like it's going out from underneath us. And we're here picking at bones that we shouldn't be fighting, not us. The people who need to sacrifice are not us. They're people, the corporations, wealthy people. I'm willing to pay taxes, more taxes, whatever it takes. But those people need to help us. And this is not right. It just isn't right. And it's true. So many smarter people than me have said it better. But that's how I feel.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Sue Crater. I'm the Executive Director of Ashland Supportive Housing and Community Outreach. We're a nonprofit organization that provides residential services to adults with developmental disabilities. We came into business 22 years ago to provide housing for people who were leaving Fairview Training Center due to its closing. And most of the people who came to a center are still with us. Like the people from Living Opportunities spoke to earlier, our industry is in a state of crisis. We have had no cost of living increase for the last 4 years. We've had rising costs during that time. My health insurance went up 23% last year alone. My utility bills went up 18%. Occupational health, all the training, it's going up, but the funding is not. In the meantime, minimum wage is catching up with what I can afford to pay my staff. We start at $7.75 an hour. That's pitiful for the type of work that my staff do. They pass medications, they document, they do training. They have to put up with behaviors to where sometimes they are hit or have to protect other residents from being hit. They take people to doctor's appointments, they change diapers, they brush teeth, they prepare meals. I recently was talking to the fellow making my coffee at a Dutch Brothers, and he asked me what I did, and I told him, and he said, he says, I used to do that type of work. And I thought, oh boy, staff member. And so I said, hey, here's my card. You know, why don't you come in and see me? We have some job openings. And he looked at him and he said, well, to be honest with you, he says, I make more money here. And that's pathetic.
Thank you. Hi. My name is Mary Haviland, and I don't represent any groups other than the taxpayers and U.S. citizens. I am here to inform you that I think a lot of these programs do need to be funded. However, I do feel that you should make cuts in some areas to be able to fund them. For example, you guys or the state passed something here, legislation here not too long ago to require fluoridation in the cities of larger cities of the state. We do not need this forced on us. We do not need to waste the money on those. People who want fluoridation should just buy a separate fluoridation and use it themselves. It is a poison. It is a byproduct of the aluminum industry. It is not fluorite, which is the element. Also, I wanted to say that I am not in support of Measure Legislation 769. I do not feel that we should fund this because, as a taxpayer, as a student, I have been struggling to try to pay for my own education. My mom has been going to college since I have been in high school. She is now on disability with SSI. She goes sometimes from one state to another because she has to live here or there or the other place. And every time she comes back here, she has to pay out-of-state tuition, even though she's been at that school before. It's not right that I should have to pick up the tab for people who don't even belong here, who are here illegally and should not be here. And my father was a teacher. He worked for the post office, and we have been nothing but hard-working taxpayers struggling to try to get along, try to make an ends meet. And when I can't even pay for my tuition, and I live here, why should I pay for someone else's tuition?
Thank you.
My name is Genevieve Smith, and I am new to Oregon, relatively 4 years here. And it is a splendid opportunity, and I appreciate the fact that you are here today. I want to tell you that And I'm sure you saw the paper. A few weeks ago, a two-year-old child was walking down the street in one of our neighborhoods, a perfectly safe neighborhood, a respectable neighborhood. The child was walking down the street because his parents were home. Meth providers. The four-year-old said to the officer, I can take you where the bad stuff is out in the back. And he took him to a shed, and it was there. Meth is affecting all of us. We heard from a CASA volunteer. We have 100, over 100 CASA volunteers here. If we had 100 more trained, we would be able to use them. In October and November, we had an additional 59 and 53 new foster children who were referred to CASA. People, this is just all interconnected. We need money for schools. We need money for CASA volunteers and training. We need money for the extension service because this is a community. And we are all together, and my time is up.
Thank you very much. Next group on deck, Owen White, Tim Jackal, Kurt Kessler, Miranda Brown.
I'm Eileen Ady, president of the League of Women Voters of the Rogue Valley. I live here in Medford. You have the testimony already from the League of Women Voters of the state of Oregon. So, and if you know anything about us, you know that we have reached consensus on positions of adequate funding for every one of these groups that's been mentioned here tonight. So I'll just remind you that I think your first constitutional duty, as I understand it, is to determine what the needs are of the state and then to find the revenue to pay for those needs. So we urge you to look at all the possible funding sources, including tax credits and increasing corporate taxes. And as other people have said, many of us middle-class people are willing to pay more taxes ourselves to support these funds. And many of us would support a sales tax even. So I thank you. We'll move on.
Thank you.
That was really nice. I echo that as well. Actually, my name is Rachel Chartier, and I'm taking Tanya Flockloy's place because Tanya left with her children. Tanya, Dory, and I are all Healthy Starts. We came here to talk to you today about the Healthy Start budget and your proposals to cut the budget. We Healthy Start is a very important service. We serve all first-time parents in Jackson County, regardless of income. So that means that I go to the hospitals and I see the first-time parents and offer them information about babies. And you'd be surprised that about 80% of people still think you can spoil an infant. So, I mean, just little things like that. You wouldn't think it'd make a difference right now. But in juvenile systems, it will make a difference. In the jails later on, it will make a difference. Nurturing and bonding and all that type of support right now that happens with our program when we go into the house and we mentor the mothers who want the Healthy Start program, since it is a free and voluntary program, they listen to us and they take our advice and we resource them into community resources. All these resources that they're talking about right now are the same resources that we resource them into too, our first-time parents, and we totally support all of it. You can't take one piece and not another piece, and you're going to have us baby lovers as lobbyists being up against other people who, that is not their job. We are here to serve the community, which we love, which we live in, which we want to protect, which we want to support. All of us love it. Oh, I have a letter I'm supposed to be reading. Sorry. To whom it may concern, my name is Heather, and I am writing on behalf of the Healthy Start Program in Jackson County. I have been involved with Tanya since my daughter Trinity was born in July 2003. The reason why I'm approached by this program is because I'm high risk. My parental rights were terminated for my first child as a result of substance abuse problem, and I was told that all future children would be taken at birth. This did not happen, in part because of my participation in the Healthy Start program. Just 1 minute. Among other things, Tanya Flockloy's documenting my child's development since birth, has my ability to parent, my personal growth, and my continued sobriety. Tanya believes in me and when no one else would. I don't know if I still have custody of my daughter today, if it weren't for Tanya and continued support. It would be truly a shame to lose this program, especially when it gives women like me hope. And we are good parents, and we can be productive members of society. So please, don't cut this program that truly works in our community. Our community needs this program, my daughter needs this program, and I need this program. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Nancy Seward, and I also am here taking Karen Richter's spot. A lot of us have child care issues, just like the gentleman spoke about how difficult it is for people with developmental disabilities to get here. It's also very difficult for parents to come. And I know it is probably not a very pleasant experience for all of you to feel like you're putting all your fingers in the holes in the dike. And I'm sure that's what the job feels like. And I'm sitting here listening to everybody saying, why do I have to fight over this little crumb from the piece of pie with all these other very deserving agencies? And I'm sure for you all to have to be trying to plug all those holes, it feels like you're never going to get it done. And I would think that then the next thought would be, let's fix this so it doesn't keep happening, because it happened 2 years ago, and most likely it's going to happen again 2 years hence. There have been a few people who've spoken about increasing revenues, And without making huge revenue increases, there are some revenues that seem that would be very easy to bring to our state economy. Many Oregonians probably don't know that people who have pleasure boats get tax exemptions for those pleasure boats. If we cut that out, we would get $28 million in lost revenues. I don't even own a boat, much less a pleasure boat. There are a lot of other exemptions, like people who have second homes get property tax and mortgage interest deductions. There are taxes that were allowed to expire last year for cigarettes. If we add up all of these, just these few that Karen wrote down on this paper, that's already $197 million. I think our schools and social services and public safety people could use each of those dollars. And it would make you feel better, too.
Thank you.
Hello. I'm Karen Niebuhr. I looked at your all website, and I noticed about eight of these meetings, so I want to let you know that I really respect your commitment to doing this around our state. I'm the director for the Jackson County Commission on Children and Families, and I'm here to speak in support of the House budget and not in support of the Senate budget. I believe that if the Senate budget was enacted and the commission was put under the Department of Human Services, the local Commission on Children and Families wouldn't exist in the next biennium. I think, and I'm not a critic of Department of Human Services. Actually, half of my job is with alcohol and drug programs. They pay my salary for that half. I work very hard for that half, and I like it. However, the Department of Human Services is a huge agency. It works with very specified, very particular programs and very particular populations. The populations it works with are fragile, and they're expensive. And the Department of Human Services simply does not and is never going to have a good history in working with community engagement and working with prevention and working with the general groups of at-risk kids. And just to give you kind of three quick examples of that, the Department of Human Services used to have their own community service department program within it. In the last in the integration movement, that department was let go. And the second piece I would look at is the safety net. 5 years ago, there were two families in the northern part of the state where kids were referred to the Department of Human Services, were not founded cases, and later on were killed by their parents. So that program was put in the Department of Human Services and now has been let go and is not a part of the next budget. So I think their history with these kinds of programs, given that they have to really engage themselves on the very their very particular populations, is just not good. Thank you.
Thank you. Next group on deck, Rachel... Oh, that was you. Okay. Lynn Hartmeyer? Come on down.
So she just said she cared about the House budget.
That's what the Children's
Please begin.
Just start.
Hello, my name is Kurt Kessler, and I'm with SEIU, Service Employees International. The opportunity to be a member of that union comes from the fact that I work for the state. Y'all are my bosses. And I see directly, I work for the Department of Human Services specifically, and my job enables me to see directly the effect that your budget has on the citizens of the state. I'm what they call a hearing rep. So I represent the policies that result from the legislation you pass. Essentially, when a worker closes a door on a client following your legislation, it's my job to lock that door and remove the key if it was a valid closure or reduction or whatever. And basically, I implement the nuts and bolts of your budget. And specifically, the agency I work for serves disabled folks and the elderly. Another job that I have that I've had recently is actually when people come in looking for services, first person that they would talk to is me. And a good part of what I did there was tell people I can't help you. And so people would come forward and say, you know, I'm getting $700 a month in SSD, right? And my medications are costing $800. It would be my job to say, you're over income for our programs. I'm sorry. I realize that you need these things in order to survive, but we can't provide them. Kind of a joke is to say that my current job has become one of an ineligibility worker rather than an eligibility worker.
Thank you.
Sure.
My name is Lynn Horstemeyer, and I'm a taxpayer. I do not work for the state or any of the county organizations. However, I pay taxes in the state and in the county. So what I'm looking at is one of the things that all of the representatives and people running for the Senate, that ran for representative or Senate, Democrat and Republican in Jackson County, all said one thing. The first thing we want to do is fund education. And I mean people who won and people who lost in our last election in November. All of them said the same thing. Fund education first. They all agreed on that. And I think that's one thing we ought to be looking at. I would like all of you here to commit to having education funded by the end of this month. Then fund the most important areas after that, which would be public safety and social services. And then from there, work out the rest of the budget. That's all I have to say.
Thank you.
My name's Owen White. Any of you tired yet? For a change, I'd like to talk about something positive. That might be shocking. And that is 4-H. The 4-H program throughout the state, and specifically in Jackson County, is something we need to make sure that we keep. 4-H students are becoming the leaders of tomorrow. 4-H helps teach students stuff that you wouldn't normally learn in school, or if you do learn it in school, it takes it to a higher degree. Anything from agriculture, where we started off from about a century ago, up to art, photography, home economics, computers, and public speaking. As an instance myself, a few years ago, I'd be kind of like this, and I'd be all jittery. I wouldn't be able to speak in front of anybody. That's a great fear for many people. But through the 4-H program, people are able to conquer their fears. You learn how to talk in front of people. You learn leadership skills that you wouldn't normally learn anywhere else. For instance, right now, the Know Your State Government conference is going on. Students from across the state are in Salem. And today, this conference, they're learning about the judicial system. Before, we did a mock Senate trial, or mock Senate, going over issues. Just recently, I attended the National 4-H Congress. 25 youth from our state went to this Congress in Atlanta, Georgia. And the Oregon delegation was one of the best. Every time we went to an event, Oregon was dressed for it. That might not seem much, but that's how much we recognize the need for it. I guess I'm just asking you please not to cut the legs out of our future leaders, because that'd make it kind of hard to walk.
What level are you at school? In school?
I'm a senior this year.
Thank you.
I had to stay
here
back for a scholarship interview.
Thank you.
Thanks.
That completes the list of folks that signed up. On behalf of the committee, I want to extend my thanks to not only the school district, the colleges, and all of you folks that came out tonight to address us. We appreciate it very, very much. And we certainly do listen, and we appreciate the input. So with that, meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.
You got caught up in the traffic too.
ATM.
I didn't leave till 3. I didn't leave till 3 o'clock.
Oh, you're supposed to come along with me.